This is The Record. Coming up, foreign policy and media critic Noam Chomsky. He's the one who coined the term manufacturing consent for what he thinks the mainstream media does when it comes to politics. It is Election Day. The deadline to get your ballot in is this evening. So we've been asking your thoughts about voting.
As a black man looking at my ballot, I had a deja vu. Politicians have lied to my grandfather about freedom. Politicians lied to my father about full employment. Politicians lied to me about education equality. Big politicians are lying to my sons about police profiles. Voting is just another coin rusting in the bottom of a wishing well.
I'm voting today because we live in a representative democracy, and that is our job, to be informed voters. And I guess you could say you get what you pay for, and if you want good government, should pay attention to the elections and vote and try to elect the best people for the job.
But as we just heard from Secretary of State Wyman, most people in Washington State who are eligible to vote will not.
More than one in four people never register to vote.
And Wyman says among registered voters, only about 51%, half, will cast ballots.
So it's safe to say that a majority of voting age adults, maybe not public radio listeners, but most voting age adults will not vote today. Perhaps you're someone who is not casting a ballot. Is it for political reasons? Call the feedback line at 206-221-3663.
Do tell us why you're not voting. Are you a felon and you're not allowed to vote? Is it because you don't feel very strongly about any of the issues? Or maybe you just don't care. Tell us why you're not voting today. Our phone number, 206-221-3663. With Ross Reynolds, I'm Marcy Silman, and this is The Record.
Support for KUOW comes from World Vision, striving to bring lasting change to children in need through clean water, health, education, and more. Learn more at worldvision.org. World Vision believes in children.
52 degrees in Seattle with clouds in the sky and scattered light rain across the area. Forecast calls for a continuing chance of showers through the afternoon, maybe some sun breaks, and a high of 53.
KUOW would like to thank everyone who participated in the fall membership drive. Now we need to close our books. If you've mailed in your pledge payment, thank you. If not, please send in your payment today. And thanks for supporting KUOW and Public Radio.
It's The Record. Noam Chomsky has been called the father of modern linguistics, but he's even better known as a social and foreign policy critic. He slams both American foreign policy and global capitalism. Chomsky has also condemned what he calls the ideological role of the mainstream corporate mass media in manufacturing consent toward the desirability of capitalism and political powers that support capitalism. Noam Chomsky has been speaking and writing about these issues tirelessly since the Vietnam War. Now he is 84. Noam Chomsky's recent book, co-written with Andrei Vilcek, is called On Western Terrorism: From Hiroshima to Drone Attacks. Noam Chomsky told me that U.S. power is fading.
American power in the world is indeed declining, but we should remember that it's been declining since 1945. 1945 was the peak of U.S. power. At that time, the U.S. had about half the world's wealth. The U.S. economy had gained enormously during the Second World War. Industrial production almost quadrupled. Other industrial countries had been devastated or severely harmed. The U.S. had unimaginable security. It controlled the hemisphere, both oceans, opposite sides of both oceans, overwhelming in military force. So there's never been power like that in world history. But it started to decline pretty fast. Within a few years, China declared independence, 1949. That's an event known in the United States and the West as the loss of China. And there's a huge domestic issue in the United States ever since then about who is responsible for the loss of China. It was a core part of the McCarthyite attack on civil liberties. It's a very interesting concept. I can't lose your computer. I could lose my computer. I can't lose yours. So how come we lost China? Well, unquestioned terminology reflects the tacit assumption that we basically own the world. And if some part gets out of our control, we've lost it. And that's intolerable. Going back to American decline, there was a big decline in 1949 with the loss of China, so-called loss of China. That led immediately to fears that the U.S. might lose Indochina. That's the background for the long murderous Indochina wars. And it continues with the process of decolonization and the reconstruction of other industrial societies. By about, say, 1970, the U.S. Share of global wealth was about 25%, which is still enormous, but it's not 50%. Meanwhile, in those same years, the U.S. started to lose control of the United Nations. In the early years, it was totally subject to U.S. will just because of distribution of power in the world. But by the mid-60s, that was changing. In 1965, the United States cast its first veto. And from 65 until the present, the U.S. is far in the lead in vetoing Security Council resolutions. Britain is second. No one else is even close. That, again, reflects the loss of control, the loss of ability to determine what's happening. And in recent years, that's increased further. Since essentially the Reagan years, there's been another major factor contributing to U.S. decline, and that's U.S. policies internal to the United States, which are severely harming the country and are enriching a tiny sector, but harming the general population and making the country as a whole much weaker, much less influential in world affairs. So that's self-inflicted decline. That reached a peak a couple of weeks ago with the shutdown of the government and the barely escaping decision to about the debt ceiling.
Noam Chomsky is my guest. We're talking about his most recent book he's co-written called On Western Terrorism, From Hiroshima to Drone Attacks. Is the decline of the U.S. power good for the world, or will some other form of terrorism replace it?
Well, there are no nice guys in international affairs. But in general, I think a decline in centralized power tends to be more or less favorable for any institution, world government too. So I think it has a generally positive effect, but has negative effects too. I mean, it's not the way it's put here is that the U.S. will no longer be able to carry out its noble mission of promoting democracy and human rights and putting an end to crimes and so on. That's almost total illusion. That's not what the U.S. has done. It's not what any great power would do, certainly not what we've done. It's a doctrine. It's quasi-religious doctrine, but it doesn't stand up to a moment's investigation when you look at the actual historical record.
Noam Chomsky, there have been some cognitive studies suggesting that our core beliefs always trump the facts, that when we're presented with facts that contradict our core beliefs, we not only reject those facts, but we cling more strongly to those core beliefs. Do you think that is true of human nature, and would that explain why some facts get ignored?
There's some truth to it. I'd question the notion core beliefs, core doctrines. There are core doctrines, maybe people believe them, maybe they don't, but they repeat them all the time. And it's true that we tend not to accept challenges to them. To a certain extent, that's rational. So even in the sciences, let's say advanced sciences, if you have evidence that some theory is extremely successful and something comes along that seems to contradict it, it's not uncommon to dismiss what appears to contradict it, kind of put it to the side and hope that one of these days it'll be taken care of. In that sense, keeping to core beliefs in the face of contradictory evidence can sometimes be rational. But in the kinds of, in the domains that we're talking about, it's essentially like religious belief, dedicated religious belief. Doesn't matter what the facts are, I'm going to believe it. And I don't think the reasons for that are simply cognitive capacities. It's that there's enormous advantages to keeping to the core beliefs. Nobody likes to look into the mirror and see the world's leading terrorist. What you want to do is look into the mirror and see someone noble, honorable, maybe misled, and so on. It's a good form of self-defense, particularly for the articulate intellectuals who are the ones who disseminate this doctrine. That's essentially their task, put a good face on power systems. That's been the dominant history of intellectuals right through history, remains so. And if you accept that stance, many advantages accrue, direct advantages. For one thing, status, privilege, respect, your books get favorably reviewed, you're applauded, and so on. And another thing is you're not really required to have to do much work. It's easy. You don't need high standards of evidence. So if you say that the United States is dedicated to peace and democracy and justice and so on, you don't need any evidence. If you try to if you raise objections to standard secular religious doctrines, all of a sudden you have to meet the standards of physics. You have to have massive documentation, lots of footnote references, huge amount of work, and then it's discounted anyway. So there are pretty good reasons why it's tempting to accept the prevailing doctrinal system and not challenge and question it.
This has been a pretty grim discussion in many ways. I'm wondering where you, Noam Chomsky, find hope in the world.
Well, there are two answers to that. One answer is that we really have no choice but to find hope in the world. You have actually two options. You can say, I'll give up hope. I'm not going to try, guaranteeing that you'll help make things worse. Or you can say, look, I'll keep hope. I'll maintain hope. I'll do what I can. And maybe I'll help make the world a little better place. Between those options, there's not much of a choice. But beyond that, there's good objective reasons to have hope. Just look over our own lifetimes. Mine's longer than yours, I suppose. But even in the last 30, 40, 50 years, there's been significant progress in many domains. Take the Iraq War. That's the first war in imperial history that was massively protested before it was even officially launched. And that I think, had major effect. The Iraq War was horrible enough, but the Bush administration never even contemplated trying measures that Kennedy and Johnson carried out without much thought about public opinion. So it could have been a lot worse. Well, not anything to cheer about very much, but it is a change for the better. And this and many other examples show that organized, dedicated activism over a long period can have an effect. There are serious questions, as to whether the effect can come quickly enough to save us from what may be really serious disaster.
That's Professor Noam Chomsky, his latest book co-written with Andrei Vilcek on Western terrorism, from Hiroshima to drone attacks.